First of all, I want to thank the Historical Society of Pennsylvania for this invitation and for sponsoring this event. And I've been out of Philly for 5 years now. This feels like coming home. Even though I'm sorry, I apologize, I brought the rain with me. I was coming from south. So just a little bit about myself. I'm a professor of history, as Laurie pointed out, and for most of my adult life, I've been interested, studying, researching, writing about, talking about the Puerto Rican diaspora in the United States, because I am of the Puerto Rican diaspora. My parents came from Puerto Rico. My father, when he got out of the Army in 1946, and my mother in 1947, and so that's my experience, and that motivated me. So in addition to the anthology that Laurie mentioned, there is a chapter in a book that Temple University just published on global immigration in the city of Philadelphia. And one of the chapters I wrote on the experience of Puerto Ricans and the Pan-Latino community of Philadelphia. Tonight's material, what I'm going to be talking about, is part of a book I'm writing on the origins of the Puerto Rican community in Philadelphia, and this part of it tonight is part of the last chapter of that book. And I also wanted to mention that since I've been living in Miami, I began researching the history of Puerto Ricans there. And so I did that as I moved to Philadelphia 20 years ago. Now I'm doing it in Miami. I'm hoping to stay put. I'm not interested in writing a history of Puerto Ricans in Arizona. Although I have a daughter who lives there, and unfortunately, I do have to visit Arizona sometime soon. In addition, I also want to say hello to a couple of friends who are here and who are important parts of the Latino presence in the city of Philadelphia. My good friend and my brother, someone who spent 20 years in the city government, former Councilman at Large Angel Ortiz, is sitting right here. Sitting next to him is my compadre, who works for the mayor of the city of Philadelphia, heading up the Office on Immigrant Services, Mr. Izzy Colon. And I want to specifically thank three organizations I'm going to be mentioning tonight because they've had a historic impact on the Latinization, if you will, of Philadelphia. And there are many organizations and many individuals. I forgot Dr. Ron Webb from Temple University, director of the Latin American Studies program, is in here. The three organizations are, and I'd like to see a hand if someone is here from that organization, the Council of Spanish-Speaking Organizations, better known as El Concilio. Are there anyone from Concilio here tonight? I wanted to give them a shout out. ASPIRA of Pennsylvania is also an important organization I'm going to be talking about tonight. And I know this next organization is in the house because the chairman of the board of directors is here, Taller Puertorriqueño, Mr. Galdo Gonzalez. Before coming to the event, I got an email from someone. I'm not sure if she's here tonight, but it was an email that objected a little bit to something that was said in the promotional material for this event, because it referred to Puerto Ricans as immigrants. And so the email challenged that, and the argument went something like, Puerto Ricans are not immigrants. So all I want to say about that is this. The technical difference between immigrants and migrants is that, as you all know, migrants are people who move from one part of a country or territory to another. Right? Think migrant workers, right? Farm workers. And immigrants are people that come into the country from another country. And there has been this huge debate about whether Puerto Ricans who come to the United States are technically migrants because Puerto Rico is a territory of the United States, therefore they're migrating within the American nation, or whether Puerto Ricans are immigrants because they're actually coming from another country, even though they're citizens, into the United States. And I'm going to leave that debate up to you because it depends on where you stand in the Puerto Rican political spectrum that you're going to decide whether we are one, the other, and neither, or both. I'm here tonight to talk about Hispanic heritage and Latino heritage and the role that Puerto Ricans have played in that in Philadelphia. Now, Hispanic heritage has been celebrated in Philadelphia since at least the 1920s, before it was a nationally designated holiday by the United States Congress and President Ronald Reagan at the time. What is different today, contrary to the early decades of the 20th century, is that while the early celebrations were limited to a small pan-Latino enclave spread throughout the city, the celebrations today, includes greater numbers of non-Latinos in the community of Philadelphia, an example of which is this event tonight. Now, Puerto Ricans, residents of the city, have made a singularly and significant contribution to the recognition and acceptance of the Latino presence in the city by non-Latino community. Between the 1950s and the 1990s, Puerto Ricans led the way towards the Latinization of the city. And what I mean by Latinization is the process of making aware the presence, diversity, language, cultural, and political characteristics of Latinos to the greater community at large, and helping to build that presence into the consciousness of the greater community. They built this presence from the pan-Latino enclaves that began evolving at the end of the 19th and early 20th century. And while the Latino population has steadily increased over the past 20 years, Puerto Ricans still make up approximately 2/3 of Latinos in the city. However, it is important to note that over the past 20 years, the pan-Latino, non-Puerto Rican presence has grown tremendously and has incorporated itself into a diversification of the Latino presence in the city, similar to that in the early 20th century. Beginning in the 1890s, the Latino presence began to take geographic and organizational form, prompted by an increase in Spaniards beginning around 1880, Cuban and Puerto Rican cigar makers, and other Latin American Spanish-speaking enclaves began to take form not too far from here in Southwark, in Spring Garden and Northern Liberties. When José Martí, the great Cuban patriot, organized the Cuban Revolutionary Party in 1892, he turned to, among other Latinos, in Philadelphia to mobilize. The pages of Patria, the party newspaper published between 1892 and 1898, contains many articles of the efforts, particularly of Philadelphia Cubans, in organizing in the city. There were at least six different groups locally that were affiliated with the Cuba and Puerto Rico independence movement. Beginning in the 20th century, the diversifying and growing pan-Latino presence in the city led the first citywide Spanish-speaking organization of the enclave to be formed, the Hispanic American Fraternal Association, better known as La Fraternal. It brought together different groups, and for the next 40 years was a leading cultural voice among Philadelphia Latinos. Although the local press did not publicize the events of La Fraternal, the Spanish daily in New York City, La Prensa, carried many articles of the events of La Fraternal in its pages during the 1920s and 1930s. Members of La Fraternal were also instrumental in convincing the Archdiocese of Philadelphia to establish the first Spanish language church in the city. Beginning in 1909, Our Lady of the Miraculous Medal, La Milagrosa, began to offer services in Spanish. Beginning in the mid-1920s, immigration from Europe began to decline because of restrictive laws that were passed, kept Spaniards from coming here. But Puerto Ricans, especially during the First World War and labor shortages in the city and in the war industries, began arriving, especially after 1917 when they became U.S. citizens. One of these was Dr. Jose De Chelis, who arrived in 1915. Dr. De Chelis was from a sector called La Playa de Ponce in the southern part of Puerto Rico. De Chelis arrived in Philadelphia and attended Temple University. And when he graduated from the School of Dentistry, he stayed in Spring Garden, living in the same neighborhood until his death in 1961 and becoming an active member of La Milagrosa. La Fraternal, along with other groups like Anahuac, a Mexican organization, the Latin American Club, and among others, became very active during the Second World War. And in fact, there are some pamphlets that exist in Temple University's archives. One of them was particularly interesting to me because it's a war bonds dance that Latinos sponsored to raise money during the Second World War. What really struck me about it was, one, that they did the dance in 1943, but it was the first piece of promotional material for an activity of Latinos that I found that was written in English, which to me seemed like an attempt to reach out to the greater community. But it was the arrival of Puerto Ricans here in the post-World War period, and there's a fine book written about this. I don't want to go into too many details about this history because you're welcome to come tomorrow to Taller Puerto Riqueño's book fair on Fifth Street and pick up Carmen Whalen's book on Puerto Ricans in Philadelphia. But one of the things that Whalen notes in her book is that Puerto Ricans that began arriving here in this post-war period, part of this great migration that took place, were initially received well as workers because of the labor shortage. But they all weren't always necessarily received well as neighbors. The city of Philadelphia, a city that I was not born in, but I've come to love and respect and understand its history, was and has been historically described as a city of neighborhoods. But I found out in studying the history of Philadelphia and the history of immigrants in Philadelphia that sometimes the city of neighborhoods had some underlying segregation attached to it. Yes, a city of neighborhoods, but some people could live in these neighborhoods but couldn't live in those neighborhoods. And so, yes, a city of neighborhoods, but quite a bit of segregation for a northern city. And so Puerto Ricans arriving in the late 40s and early 50s found themselves coming to a reality where there were some tensions of these communities. But individuals like Dr. Jose De Chelis, looking at this increasing wave in those first few years of Puerto Ricans, began to ask the Philadelphia Human Relations Commission, the Health and Welfare Council that existed in the city at the time, for help in this growing community. And in 1953, the commission decided that it was going to do a study on the Puerto Rican community in Philadelphia, the first one of its kind, to see how the city could address these needs. And that summer, two events, very public events, put Puerto Ricans, so to speak, and the rest of Latinos on the map. Number one is this event, this picture that right behind me, is the first flag raising. You know that the Puerto Rican Day Parade was Sunday, and as part of the Puerto Rican Day Parade festivities, they raised the flag and so forth. This is 11 years before the first Puerto Rican Day Parade. In 1953, this group of Latinos and Puerto Ricans celebrated the first Puerto Rico Day with support of the city council at the time. The problem was, or the blessing, if you will, is that the day before this event took place, a fight broke out in Spring Garden between Puerto Ricans and white residents. And it led to about a week of rioting. And so that prompted the city to, you know, move faster to try to address the needs of Puerto Ricans. But by doing so, they opened the doors for Puerto Ricans to become part of the mayor's office and, you know, to provide some services to the Puerto Rican community. Of course, the perspective of the city was that the reason why these fights took place in Spring Garden is because Puerto Ricans were having some adjustment problems in this new community. They never mentioned the word racism, but it did open the doors for the mayor to hire staff, and in fact for the governor later on to hire staff. At the same time, the government of Puerto Rico, through its migration division, had established an office in southern New Jersey to address the needs of the migrant Puerto Rican workers in Glassboro, and progressively moved the office from Glassboro to Camden, and by the end of the 50s, moved the office to Philadelphia. So Philadelphia began to be that hub that pulled all of these folks together. But the most important organizational development that took place, in my humble opinion, was that as a result of these events that took place in Spring Garden and the recognition that the city that they had this community to deal with, was the creation of something that was called the Puerto Rican Affairs Committee. And the Puerto Rican Affairs Committee pulled together the leadership, and this is the first time that the city's recognizing this leadership, of Dr. Jose de Cheles and others who would become leaders in the Puerto Rican community, Don Domingo Martinez, Doña Carmen Aponte, were all part of that effort in the late 50s. This effort by the Puerto Rican Affairs Committee and the city itself helped create the conditions for the formation in 1962 of the Council of Spanish-Speaking Organization, El Concilio. And while the Concilio was first conceived and organized as a group that brought, it was made up of different organizations, it was initially kind of an umbrella organization, if you will. The Concilio did, a couple of years after its founding, develop some institutional and rituals that we recognize today as the Puerto Rican Day Parade, the gala, the Hispanic fiesta, the flag raising, as I mentioned, and so forth. But the Concilio was also involved in a community in which significant political and economic changes were taking place, the 1960s. So Puerto Ricans and other Latinos, especially those Latinos and those Puerto Ricans that were born in the city or were coming of age in the city, that second generation, much like second generations all over the country, were being impacted by deindustrialization that was beginning in the city, loss of jobs, but more importantly, by a huge and really important and significant civil rights movement that had been evolving since the 1940s, really took strength in the 1950s, and in 1964 led to the Civil Rights Act and the Voting Rights Act the next year. These are the years of the presidency of Lyndon Johnson and the Great Society, and to try to deal with the inequities that existed, especially in the cities that were losing the jobs, to try to provide social services. And this is what Concilio, as the leading organization, was able to do, was to negotiate and receive funds to provide those social services. But to their credit, The leadership of the Concilio believed that the future of the community was its youth, and that not enough Puerto Rican kids were graduating from high school. And I was saddened to read a report about the Philadelphia schools that just came out. I'm talking about, wow, 40 years later, and we're still dealing with these issues. But at that time, the Concilio leadership turned to an option that had been evolving in New York to address the needs of young Puerto Rican children and that weren't graduating from high school, and it was an organization called Aspira. And Aspira had been founded in 1961 by Dr. Antonia Pantoja and another group of Puerto Ricans who in the 1950s came together and formed an organization called the Puerto Rican Forum to evolve and develop this organization that would address the needs of Puerto Rican youth. And the Concilio leadership understood the importance of that and brought in 1969 Aspira to Philadelphia. And Aspira is important in this Latinization of the city because Aspira, I don't know how many of you are familiar, but it's an education organization that works primarily with high school youth. It has over the last few years evolved to organize charter schools, pre-K programs, and so forth, and it's a wonderful operation, but initially it was focused on the high schools, and the way it operates and operated was to organize Puerto Rican and Latino youth in the high schools as clubs to have them receive counseling and support so they would graduate from high school and go on to college. And the Concilio brought that to Philadelphia. What they didn't count on, and I was talking to Izzy Colon before because Izzy used to work with Aspira in New York and here, is that by training young people in leadership, right, there comes a point in which those young people want to exercise that leadership. Okay? And those of you who are parents like me know exactly what I'm talking about. We want our children to be assertive. We want them to be able to speak up for themselves. We want them to develop their own agenda and their own vision. Just don't do it against us. Right? Well, there comes a time when this natural conflict between younger and older people, no matter what culture it is, comes to fruition. And so within the Concilio and the relationship, this came to conflict. The young people, you know, who saw the leadership of the Concilio as the old people, the old heads, and because they are young, they're energetic, they're smart, not as smart as they think, but they're smart. They think they know where they're going, and they want to strike out on their own. It developed some tension in the community, but these young aspirantes were feeding off the civil rights movement, the anti-war movement of the 1960s, what was happening in Latin America and all the revolutions. And so they created their own small group that was connected to folks in New York. It was called the Young Lords Party. And the Young Lords Party, as Carmen Whalen writes in another piece that she writes about barrio politics and island politics in Philadelphia, took form of both organizing for the needs of the Puerto Rican community here and independence for Puerto Rico as it evolved at that time. And though it was a short-lived experience, the Young Lords Party, the Partido Socialista Puertorriqueño, the Puerto Rican Socialist Party, and other organizations of their types, which lasted much longer, incorporated this youth, right, and gave them support and helped them organize. And some of those aspirantes are, judges now. I was recently told both Republicans and Democrats. Some of the most ardent people who struggled at that time. But in any event, it created an environment of enthusiasm of youth and using education as the vehicle to organize and express their youthful concerns about the community and their connection with Puerto Rico. A group of artists among them began thinking about how to express themselves. And they put together a project, I believe it was in the basement of Aspira, to produce some artwork and serigraphs, kind of a workshop, if you will. And out of that experience of cultural affirmation, cultural expression, comes Taller Puertorriqueño, right? Not only the premier Latino cultural and arts organization in the city of Philadelphia, but I would say that it is as good as any cultural and arts center in the city of Philadelphia. And they have been around now for 35 years. But something else interesting began happening as these youthful folks and began organizing, and these internal conflicts of the community that I'm not going to go into, is that beginning in the early 1960s, Philadelphia began to experience, for the first time in about 15 years, an influx of Latinos who were not Puerto Ricans. And so one of the events that prompted this was the revolution in Cuba, which led to the exodus of tens of thousands of Cubans who came to live in different parts of the United States, but a group of them came to Philadelphia, supported by the Puerto Rican community, La Milagrosa Church. They began to organize their own representation, their domino clubs, their restaurants, and a small Cuban enclave began to develop. About the same time, in the early 1960s, in the Dominican Republic, Leonidas Trujillo, who had been dictator of the Dominican Republic for over 30 years, was assassinated. After his assassination, elections were held in the Dominican Republic for the first time in 1962, and Juan Bosch, the head of the Dominican Revolutionary Party, was elected. The American administration got nervous that the Dominican Republic was going the way of Cuba. A civil war broke out in the Dominican Republic, and we sent in 10,000 Marines to sort of separate the forces, but we prompted an exodus of Dominicans to the United States, and for the first time we begin to see growing numbers of Dominicans in the city of Philadelphia. In Latin America during those years, there were many revolutionary guerrilla-type activities going on. One of the most significant ones was in Colombia. And behind the upheaval and the conflict in Colombia, you begin to see Colombians moving into the city of Philadelphia. So as this community is shaping and growing, the Puerto Rican organizations, the Puerto Rican community begins to embrace these Latinos and act as Virginia Sanchez Corral has referred to, a welcome mat into the city of Philadelphia. The politics in the city also begin to shift in this time period. During the 1970s, there was a mayor in the city of Philadelphia called Frank Rizzo. And Frank Rizzo had been police commissioner and had national reputation, decided that he was going to push for a charter change in the city so that he could run for a third term. And this prompted a backlash of organizing in the black community, in white community, and Puerto Ricans were right there involved in this struggle. It was called the Stop Frank Rizzo campaign, a campaign that was successful, but it helped shape the political structure among the Puerto Rican community. It prompted people to run for office. Candelario Lamboy and Jose Rodriguez and others, some of them were unsuccessful. One was successful, Herman Quiles, the first Puerto Rican, the first Latino elected to the State House in 1968, but he only served one term. But it created in the city of Philadelphia this notion that the Puerto Rican and the Latino community generally was going to be a force to be reckoned with. It had to, whatever political arrangements were going to be made, it had to include this community. And so by the early 1980s, out of the efforts of Puerto Ricans organizing around civil rights and housing through the Puerto Rican Alliance and the National Congress of Puerto Rican Rights, in the early 1980s, Nelson Diaz is appointed judge at the Common Pleas Court. The Board of Education appoints, I believe she's Panamanian, Christine Torres Matrullo to serve on the board. Our own city councilman, Angel Ortiz, first appointed and then elected, and Ralph Acosta becomes a state representative. So now the presence, right, and again, my argument is that Puerto Rican activism spread and helped develop this Latinization of the city is in shape. What happens then? is that larger numbers, significantly larger numbers of Latinos are coming into the city, and they're being embraced by the Concilio. Their kids are attending arts programs at Taller Puerto Riqueño and also participating in Aspira. And so Dominicans begin to organize themselves. The Bodegueros, their cultural organization, the Colombian Coalition, the Venezuelans, the Peruvians, all of these organizations, organizational efforts begin to take place. One element that I'm going to be closing soon, one element that I forgot to mention is in the media. There has been Spanish language radio in Philadelphia since at least 1948. WDAS, WHAT radio programs all throughout the 1950s. And in 1971, WABC establishes one of the longest running programs of its kind, Puerto Rican Panorama. And Puerto Rican Panorama for all of this time has also been a place where Philadelphians can see not only Puerto Ricans but other Latinos and non-Latinos talking about issues affecting Latinos on television. So over the last 15 years, we've seen the spectacular, wonderful growth of diversification of Latinos in the city of Philadelphia. I am impressed and I'm happy to hear that the Dominicans celebrate their day and their parades, and the Colombians and the Mexicans. As I often tell my students, when we talk about Hispanics or we talk about Latinos, you cannot be a Latino if you're not Puerto Rican. You cannot be a Latino if you're not Mexican. You can't be a Latino if you're not Dominican. That's the ticket into the tent. So when we talk about Latinos, what we're really talking about is this diverse, right, grouping of people. And Puerto Ricans, among others, but significantly in the city of Philadelphia, Puerto Ricans have been there to both promote and support, organizationally and otherwise, these Latinos that have come into the city and are part of this wonderful mosaic. I remember when Councilman Ortiz was serving in city council, buses of Puerto Ricans going to Chester County to support the Mexican migrant workers, the mushroom workers, in their efforts to unionize, right? And I am pleased to see that the Mexican consulate is so involved in supporting the growing Mexican community in South Philadelphia. One of the first people that became an advocate for Mexican residents in South Philadelphia before the city of Philadelphia is a woman named Rosa Santiago. You may know her daughter, Nancy Santiago. And Rosa is a Puerto Rican who was born and raised in South Philadelphia. So, in conclusion, Puerto Ricans both benefited from the early pan-Latino enclaves, but also served as a welcome mat, as I indicated earlier, to this wave of Dominicans, Colombians, and other Latinos that have come to the city. It is through that leadership that we helped establish this presence in Philadelphia and this recognition that we exist. Now, whether we call it Latinization or we celebrate the Hispanic Fiesta, and even though I have to admit that 98 or 99% of those drinking beer on May 5th have no idea what Cinco de Mayo is, you know, there is some elements of commercialization here that is sometimes a little bit hard to swallow, no pun intended. I do admit, though, that some of those drinkers do know that it has something to do with Mexico. But it is a recognition, that we are part of the mosaic. So let's celebrate that uniqueness, or as my department chair calls it, our universality, as well as our diversity, and enjoy the fact that we are one America. Thank you very much. I want to, she's going to kill me, but I want to recognize a good friend of mine, a dear colleague, whose book recently came out, University of Illinois Press, I believe it is, on Puerto Rican citizens in New York in the 20th century. Dr. Lauren Thomas is sitting back here. It's a great book and a great addition to the Puerto Rican diaspora, and it deals with this element of contested citizenship. I opened up by talking about immigrants and migrants, right? And so Lauren's book was just recently published, and you should get it and read it for those of you who are interested, both in the experience of Puerto Ricans in the United States, in this case New York, but also in the greater, the impact and the relationship between Puerto Ricans and the greater community and the issues as they evolved during the 20th century in New York. And I'm pleased that she's here. She was a great aid to me while I was writing my dissertation, and I'm always happy to plug for her. She lives in Germantown, so what can I tell you? Teaches in Rutgers Camden. Okay. All right, ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much. I will be around. I want to give one more shout out to a professor of history at Temple University and a former student of mine, Ariel Arnau, right back there.